Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. This is the show for Monday, June 22nd. That's the sound of protest on the streets of Tehran. The demonstrators accuse Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of fraud in his claim to victory in the presidential election. Thousands of people have turned out to support presidential candidate Mir Hussein Mousavi. The government has shown some tolerance for the protests, but there's also been violence, mostly at the hands of the besieged militia, and a crackdown on dissidents. Hadi Rahimi is the director of the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran. He's been in close contact with protesters there. He says he's surprised by the variety of people who are demonstrating against the government.
Obviously, a lot of young people who have very serious grievances that they have been looking for ways to express them are out on the street. But at the same time, a friend of mine was telling me that he had talked to his mother, who's about 65 years old, saying that she's someone who's completely apolitical, has never paid any attention on what is going on in politics, is out on the street and saying that she cannot believe that how many ordinary people like her, not just the energetic youth, but a large swath of people. I think basically what has happened, people feel like their sense of national honor, their sense of integrity has been so wounded and insulted by this process. And it's very similar to 79 too, that suddenly you had these hundreds of thousands of people on the street because they just felt so cheated and lied to and held back that they had to come out and express it. And I think that is the expression we're seeing, the wounding of the national psyche.
And that sense of Iranian national pride was wounded, is it by the election process being allegedly fraudulent, or is it the economy? Is it the charges of corruption within Ahmadinejad's administration? What is it?
Combination of all. I mean, in general, the underlying issues are those economic allegations of fraud. For example, one of the people in detention is an economist who had been very vocal in Iranian and foreign press. If you just Google him, he was on all over foreign media.
Saeed Leilaz,
talking about where have billions of dollars disappeared just before the election. And most probably they were used to buy people into voting or get Ahmadinejad's election machine going. He has been asking where is that money so constantly that parliamentarians have had to pick it up. Ahmadinejad has been asked to explain it. He has never explained it. So those are underlying causes along with the social and political needs of the people. But more by that national psyche being wounded, I meant the sort of what we're seeing as this explosion of outrage is the way the election results were announced, literally under a pseudo-military coup. They brought out the armed forces, surrounded Interior Ministry, and between 2 in the morning and 6 in the morning started announcing the vote count, and out of the blue claimed that Ahmadinejad had got 65% of the vote. It was that wide margin, I think, that seemed very implausible to many people, and the way it was conducted that made them feel like they have to stand up. This is just not something to stand back and take.
The protests in Iran have been likened to China's 1989 student movement in Tiananmen Square. The massacre there had its 20th anniversary earlier this month. Rahimi says there are similarities and stark differences between Tehran and Tiananmen.
The parallel between what is happening in today's Iran and China in 1989 is that on one hand, we have a very extreme rift within the political leadership in Iran, just like in China at the time the Communist Party had reform-minded leaders who were being confronted by more military hardline elements. And at the same time, we have huge numbers of people, mostly young people, who are very eager, very thirsty for opening up of the atmosphere, for seeking their civil liberties, and they're coming out, staging peaceful rallies day after day, numbering in hundreds of thousands, and are not being violent and are trying to push the state to accept their demands. And the other parallel is that exactly we're waiting to see where will the political conflict, how will it get resolved? Will it be the people who are on the side of the people and their demands prevail? Or will the military and hardline elements manage to carry out a crackdown, purge the reformers exactly just like China and follow the Chinese model of keeping very tight control domestically and yet opening up to the outside world. My understanding is that actually Ahmadinejad's government had planned after these elections to immediately move forward with negotiations with the U.S. and open up the diplomatic relations and focus on the economy, very much just like China, get people economically happy so that they will forget their political demands and seeking their rights and that way consolidate their power. Those are the parallels I see between Iran and China of 1989.
Right. In both cases, at the heart of what's going on is a power struggle within the government. Is that right?
Exactly. For 30 years, they have been two factions within the Iranian government competing for power. And now it looks like their conflict has come to a head-on collision. At the core of it is the supreme leader and whether he can exercise arbitrary absolute powers. At the same time, there are other clerics who see themselves as his parallel. They believe that he is only leader because of their approval. And if they are willing to withdraw their approval, he will lose legitimacy. And actually, under the Constitution, the other clerics have the power to withhold legitimacy from him.
When I was in Iran in 2007, people were still talking about a millimeter revolution. They were talking about change coming very slowly, about change in government not happening through street demonstrations like this, through a revolution like there was in 1979, but through very small, peaceful changes. Has that changed? Has something shifted?
No. That the demand of the people for a reform-oriented change versus revolutionary change is still there. I'm talking to people in Iran for 10 years now, and not a single person ever said they are revolutionary and they want to overthrow everything and rebuild a new order. They have that experience from 1979, and they have seen that their parents' generation and their own generation has paid dearly for that. They do want the changes to be such that their lives, their social economic lives especially, are not turned upside down. But what has changed is because so much frustration over hoping that things move forward millimeter by millimeter, and they haven't. If anything, they have gone back under Ahmadinejad by many, many millimeters. Now that frustration is exploding in the streets. This is not so much about a pro-Mousavi movement as it is about an anti-Ahmadinejad movement.
I wonder how you see the effect that technology has in terms of, could we really call this the Tehran's Tiananmen? Is it an effect that technology and the fact that this is being broadcast sort of live worldwide, is it in fact preventing the kind of cover-up that we're talking about when we talk about Tiananmen?
Exactly. Up to now, like, for example, when the shootings happened last Monday in Tehran, the government tried to keep a lead on it and make it sound like there were rumors. But so many phone recorded footage came out of it and were shown all over the world of what was happening, of snipers from a building shooting at people, that the government next day very uncharacteristically came forward and admitted that 7 people have died. Up to now, that access to the outside world is preventing such a crackdown. But my fear is that if they completely shut down internet highway to Iran, then within a day they could carry out anything, and it would take time. I still think everybody has their phones and little cameras with them. There will be a lot of footage and images of it. It's just that it may not be live. But up to now, that live coverage, that citizen journalism has prevented them from going forward with harsher actions.
And yet there have been killings of students, it looks like, by the besieged militia. There were protesters killed on the street. What are you seeing, or what are you hearing in terms of the violence that has happened?
The violence was very extreme up to about a day ago. It has somewhat subsided because I think of the power of these images being repeated all over the world constantly. So the violence against students was very extreme. Actually, we're not sure if there were any dead in the universities in Tehran. In other cities, there might have been. But we know that a lot of people were injured, and just the amount of violence unleashed on them using plastic bullets, using electric buttons and all kind of knives and so on. Was the pictures I have seen the students, we were chatting actually with students as they came under attack. And within hours, they were sending us footage of their mobile phones they had taken of the destruction. These were dormitories at nighttime, around 2 in the morning attacked. And the entire dormitories, you would see huge gaping holes in the walls and doors that they had shot at to open them. And the whole place looked like it had been a war zone, basically. Right now, as we're sitting here on my phone, I'm receiving Twitter messages from Iran left and right. And internet email is how people organizing and keeping up with the headquarters of Mousavi. And that is why the government also has moved very heavily against that. Mobile phones have effectively been down in Iran for the past week. People who do get to use it say that after 30 seconds to a minute, it goes off. Foreign journalists have been kicked out, but YouTube is full of images and footage of what is happening daily. Of course, it's becoming more and more difficult for them to upload because the internet has also been slowed down purposely very much. At the end, the authorities seem to be moving to a stage where they may shut down the entire internet and the phone system to if there is any big event is about to happen.
A testament to how powerful this is and what an organizing tool it is.
Exactly. It has become the infrastructure of the movement right now. But I should also add that the 1979 revolution was also technologically driven. It was called the revolution of cassette tapes. Khomeini, originally having no access to the population, disseminated his views through taped recordings that were passed hand to hand and recorded and reproduced. So at that time, that was the technology of the day, and it actually brought down the government. And today, it is internet and mobile devices.
Wow. So from bootleg cassette tapes produced when he was in exile in Paris and then flown in or whatever to Twitter and Facebook and all this.
I think the difference is that in 1979, we had a generation who truly was comfortable describing itself as revolutionary. We had had 2 decades of urban warfare, and the heroes of that revolution at the time were those guerrilla movements, urban guerrilla movements. It was something that they saw this as continuation of like a Che Guevara-type revolution that now is coming to a popular boiling point. But today's generation does not describe itself as revolutionary. They do not want to see their lives turned upside down. They want reform. That is why they really right now don't want to focus on whether it should be theocracy or secular republican. They hope that would be the process that it will lead to. But I think the key point right now, which is significant in terms of its importance, is the absolute rule of the supreme leader. Can Iran really function with an individual having all the power of veto and decision making? And that is why the clerics in Qom have been quiet, because they are wondering that if they let this one go, what could be next? Is the supreme leader going to become more and more like a dictator, manipulating the political process completely? Not that he hasn't been, but they're worried that he will really explicitly start becoming the individual controlling state. And I think that is the debate. People want that arbitrary, absolute rule to come to an end, and and the supreme leader become more of a figurehead, and politicians, the president, the parliament, the institutions of the state become the active implementers of policy and decision makers.
That was Hadi Ghaemi of the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran. Our conversation about Iran will surely continue as events unfold there. That's Rights Watch for this week. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. The podcast is available on iTunes, and you can join our new Rights Watch podcast group on Facebook. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.